everybody. Welcome back to the Steven Universe podcast. I'm Mackenzie Atwood, and today, as we continue our deep dive into the people and places of Steven Universe, we've come to Lapis Lazuli. Now, the last time we saw Lapis, she was leaving Earth. So what does that mean for her character and her story? We're going to ask creator Rebecca Sugar in this episode. I've also got actress Jennifer Paz, who voices Lapis, along with storyboard supervisor Hilary Florido. They're going to share their thoughts and insights on what they love best about Lapis and some of their favorite moments and episodes. And we also managed to grab Lapis herself for a few minutes before she left the planet to talk about her love of fart jokes, being trapped in a mirror, and her feelings about shoes. So let's get started today with creator Rebecca Sugar and former executive producer Ian Jones-Cordy. Thank you guys so much for coming on and talking to me.
Of course.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, for sure. So today we're talking about Lapis. What was Lapis like early on in the conception of the show?
Lapis kind of goes all the way back before the show. She's a little based off of a character in a comic that I never finished, which was actually based off a comic that I did in high school.
Yeah.
So actually, I guess in a way, it's sort of the oldest character, this character Margo.
Yeah.
Who is just a product of all of my teen angst in the form of a comic, sort of at the time when I was a teenager. And then I was doing this new comic that was sort of revisiting her. I was thinking about that character as an adult. I think I had done that original comic when I was kind of in a haze of young love and couldn't really see how that could go awry or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I revisited that as an adult, sort of thinking about the kind of toxicity that I had learned about since then and sort of revisiting that as a thought. And then when we brought her into the show, early on she was... I know that she didn't have her water wings yet because Jeff invented that.
Yeah, yeah.
She had water powers and angel wings.
Yeah, that's right.
She was just going to be everything.
Jeff kind of put those together. I remember we always thought she was going to be like kind of like moody. Like, I don't know what the best way to explain.
Well, she's vulnerable. She's incredibly vulnerable and had been taken advantage of.
But she opens up to Steven really early. So that was like a really good thing to sort of anchor her in the world of the show.
Yeah. The thing about Margo going all the way back, the comic character was Margo, going all the way back to my comics from high school is that she was sort of a troubled teen, but then she had the support of this happy-go-lucky kid who... Ian, you pointed out at some point,
yeah,
it's just my brother Steven,
yeah,
which I didn't even think about when I was writing this thing. It's like, oh yeah, I guess I've been writing the same story since...
Yeah.
Forever.
That always happens, though.
Yeah, you're always going to insert a little bit of yourself.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes it real, I feel like. Were there any, like, inspirations that you can think of outside of, like, the real stuff that you were experiencing?
I mean, there's all this stuff that relates to that comic, because... the water just being in the comic I was doing, Margo is in this space and she's being sort of manipulated by this person who can control the weather.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of ocean that was like thrashing, and he's a surfing dog.
Yeah. There was a lot of like...
No, this is probably boring, right? Because it's about a comic that will never
that
exist.
Doesn't exist,
In the comic, there's like a surfing dog that's like cool. And then there's like a scary, evil dog that can control the weather. And
yeah,
they like... One of them manipulates the weather and then the other one surfs on it.
Yeah.
Because he's cool and unfazable. And she loves both of these characters... the cartoon dogs, but then they end up both being the same horrible person.
Right, they end up being like, like the evil weather.
Like, it makes me think the way you're talking about the, just like the manipulation and stuff, obviously it makes you think of like the whole arc with Jasper and just like the relationship there. Like, what did you want to touch on with that?
I think, there was something that I wanted to express that I'd never really seen, but I just felt was really real, which is this, it's like you can be in this awful situation, especially with someone who, like, if you're with someone who really makes you believe that it's your fault and that you have to make it right and that you need them. And also, like, Lapis is in this really specific situation where she felt like she had no control, and then she was able to exercise all this hateful control over this person who was just... You know, it almost didn't matter that it was Jasper. It was just she had so much anger at so many people that she was able to take out on Jasper. And she gave up her ability to do that when they separated. Yeah. So, like, that's a huge amount of power that she suddenly loses by being away from her, even though it's so profoundly negative. And then Jasper can kind of twist the knife because they were so closely connected that she knows that that's something that Lapis really needed to do and had to do and did to her. So she's angry, but she also participated in this like incredible power surge that she wants because she's really pretty self-destructive. There's a lot going on with that. I could talk about it for hours.
Yeah.
I could talk about it for hours.
It's just, yeah, toxic. It's just...
It's toxicity, yeah. Man, that was one of the luckiest things. I did not know that the stone malachite is toxic in water. And when I read that, I was like,
yes.
Mm-hmm. I was like, that's great. Did not know that going in.
Yeah, it worked out perfectly.
Luckiest coincidence of all time.
You should have just told everyone that it was intentional.
Yeah, well, can you...
too late now.
Can you cut this? Hey, guess what, everybody? Malachite is... I totally knew that malachite is toxic in water. Anyway, I started doing a lot more gem research later on. Like when we were working on Smoky, that was one that I really liked. The meaning of that stone.
Yeah.
It was about sort of positivity at work. There's like the teamwork element, and it was, I think Steven and Amethyst are kind of the closest to like me and Steven's sibling relationship. And there's all this stuff about Smoky Quartz that felt like the perfect sort of example of that because we work together and he, you know, lifts me up and supports me in this way.
But malachite, on the other hand,
malachite, I didn't look anything up about malachite.
We weren't like,
it was like,
yeah.
It was a cool name.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
It was just really cool.
And a cool-looking stone.
Honestly, like, I always feel like that's a good reason to do something just because it's cool.
Yeah, rule of cool. I still maintain the rule of cool.
Yes. The gemstone thing you're talking about made me think about, like, Lapis's stone and, like, the way that it's placed.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of thoughts about gem.
Yeah, what were the choices there? Because it's such interesting to have it on her back.
Well, that's the thing. The thing about Lapis is that she feels like she has no control over her life or herself, and she's really, really vulnerable. And so to have a gem on your back, I mean, it makes sense for her. It's sort of between her wings. But to have your gem on your back, I mean, you can't see it. You can't really understand it. For her, it's very exposed. Her lack of control and her vulnerability, that's what her gem placement is about. She's kind of stuck and lost and, like, will never kind of be able to find that direction because this huge part of herself is almost hidden from herself and just totally exposed to everyone else.
Yeah, and we kind of echoed that with the design of the mirror that she gets stuck in. The gem is sort of in the back, away from the part that would be actually exposed to whatever she's actually supposed to be looking at. And, so that really kind of figured in to her introduction as well.
Speaking of the mirror, there's a lot of, like, I feel like with Lapis, there's a lot of, like, visuals that are, like, just really striking. And it felt like, I remember Matt and Ben told me that, like, there was, like, a sticky note with Lapis's, like, water tower being one of those really early visuals that, like, you sort of built your way up to.
Yeah.
The mirror moment where she gets taken out of the mirror felt like another one of those moments. Like, what was it like conceptualizing the character with those moments in mind?
Oh, man, a lot of that is just Paul Vileko did this amazing sequence that where the water is, like, coming up around his feet on the ground. And
forming into, like, a crystal shape.
That is all Paul.
And then, Paul did this amazing board, and then we both drew into those boards, too.
I drew
Lapis forming.
Yeah, I did the forming.
And then some of the hand stuff, and you did the hand rising up.
Rising up behind her. Yeah, that was me.
I did the gems running up, and then the hand coming down, and stuff like that. Yeah, it was really fun.
I mean, my favorite stuff in there is the when he's pulling the gem out.
Oh,
of the
yeah.
mirror. That's all.
Yeah,
well, that's
Paul,
all.
Oh, Paul Vileko did it.
Oh my god.
He
gosh.
Did like an awesome job with that. It was like very. I remember watching the pitch of it and it was so stressful. Too.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was just like, what is he going to do?
And then Ivy's rushing music for that part.
Yeah, the music
so
was really good.
Intense.
Yes.
And yeah, they came up with the Lapis theme, which has been like a recurring, sort of like a recurring leitmotif for Lapis throughout the series. And it's very, like, haunting and cool. Yeah. It's one of my favorite moments in the series.
I remember when we you had some thoughts about what it should sound like at the top of the tower that were related to
Link's Awakening. One of my favorite video games, Zelda Link's Awakening for Game Boy. There's like this moment at the end where you meet like this celestial being, and it's got like this cool, like kind of twinkly, sort of ethereal kind of score, and we referenced that to Ivy and Sirashu, and they created something that's like, yeah, it's in that same sort of neighborhood as the Lapis music, where it's like very haunting. And yeah, the whole idea was sort of to give Ocean Gem and Mirror Gem their kind of their own personality. And you sort of see it with like sort of like the palettes we use. And also like that episode is like one of the very early times where Steven is actively like going against the gem's rules. And he even gets grounded.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like those episodes have like a unique personality that's all about Lapis. And yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's something when I'm showing people the show to get them to start watching it, that's one of the ones I show, because it's just, I feel like it came together so well. Like all those pieces, you know?
Yeah.
Like recently with Lapis, we've seen her whole arc where she flew away. She took the barn and flew away in Raising the Barn. And so I was wondering, was it hard to make that decision? Like, and why was it necessary in you guys' opinion?
I mean, it's funny because, like, looking at the barn and especially Lapis and Peridot's relationship, like, you could kind of see this moment coming that there's, like, even when they first get to the barn, there's like some real cracks in that partnership. And then as mm-hmm. it goes on, it's like there's something weird going on, you know, with these two. And it might not be like 100% healthy. And sort of that moment was sort of like the culmination of all that stuff.
This is a tricky question to answer because her arc is not over.
Yeah.
So we can't really talk about how... wait, is that a huge spoiler?
What, that her arc's not over?
Okay, wait, maybe don't say this. I don't know, like, what? She's going to leave and that's
it? There's clearly going to be more episodes with Lapis.
Yeah, I won't say how, but... she continues to be... Obviously, she still has... Even if we never addressed it, she'd still have things to work through off-screen.
She had so much baggage coming out of the stuff with Jasper... That sort of getting into this new situation at the barn was bound to, I don't know, it was like headed for disaster in more ways than one.
Right. When you get out of something that bad and that attached, and then you go immediately to a new relationship.
Well, yeah,
it's
she's
like probably a bad sign.
Just like Rebecca said, she's got a lot of, Lapis has like a lot of pent up sort of, you know, issues from being stuck in a mirror, then like getting stuck in, like getting imprisoned by like homeworld gems, then getting stuck in a fusion for months. I mean, it's like
look, it's not like they're a pair of like people just bopping around and deciding to be roommates or anything. They're running from
they're running from a despotic regime.
They're you know, this is a very specific situation. I think the thing about Lapis is that she's incredibly afraid, and that didn't go away.
Yeah.
And, I mean, how could it? I think, you know, they're in hiding. They were in hiding together, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, it's scary and it's stressful. And, you know, I think Lapis can't really see the difference. This is the thing. Lapis can't really see the difference between what she just decided to do and what they were doing before.
Right.
Because to her, she's in
It's like
hiding.
Self-preservation.
Yeah.
She's still hiding.
They were isolated and they're scared. But I think Peridot has had a little more time to kind of discover the planet. And, I mean, Lapis, she saw it too, but...
But Peridot sort of came to Earth under very different circumstances.
And she's less afraid. She hasn't had the experience that Lapis had of like just how terrible this situation could become. And she's not experiencing that kind of fear, which is why she feels so obligated to be so helpful, because she knows that. She knows that there's a big imbalance in their experiences there. And, you know, she's trying to do whatever she can, but I think she also, Peridot has had the experience of fighting and winning.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's something that Lapis has never had. Yeah. I mean, she's just going off her experience. I mean, she's sort of, I guess, like, anyway, they're very, very different. They both got a lot of growing to do.
And it was just, yeah, there was just a lot of problems coming in, but they'll be all right.
Just like everyone's having a lot of problems because they're all,
I mean, yeah,
terrified that they're going to be attacked by...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day...
The force of a huge planet that they're all from.
I mean, even like at the end of the day, sort of like talking outside of them as characters and how they feel and what they've been through, it's also like... This is also a story, and, you know, you can't really have a story without, you know, people in conflict, people, like, running from things, people fighting things, and that's just what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Could be fun. Everyone...
I mean, yeah, you could, but, like, it would be...
Universe, happy hangout adventures.
We'll see if Cartoon Network wants to put that on
the air. Ages, yeah.
Okay, thank you guys so much for talking to me.
Absolutely.
Now that we've got a better understanding of Lapis and her development, let's talk to Jennifer Paz, who voices Lapis, and storyboard supervisor Hillary Florido about some of their favorite Lapis moments. All right, I'm here with Hillary Florido and Jennifer Paz. Thank you guys so much for coming on and talking to me today.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
For sure. Yay. Could you guys say just what your jobs are, your roles, so that people know?
I play Lapis Lazuli.
Mm-hmm. And I am a storyboard supervisor.
Very nice. So do you guys ever get to work together? Do your paths ever cross when you're working on the show?
Sadly, no. Not often.
Never, actually.
Sad.
We were just trying to figure it out. I think the most interaction I've ever had with Hillary was at a recent party, right?
Yeah. We got to party more. That's the only solution.
So,
more parties so we can connect.
That's the answer. That's always the answer.
She's upstairs working while the few times that I've been downstairs in the booth. So, we haven't actually crossed paths yet.
Well, that makes this very special.
I know. This is a first.
Incredible.
First time we're in a room together.
I can't wait to connect.
I know.
So that means that you guys, do you ever, like, when you're writing the dialogue, do you ever write little bits of direction or anything like that, Hillary?
Yeah, I think I do. But after I've heard you done a couple episodes, you get the rhythm, kind of the cadence.
So it gets across without having to write it out explicitly.
If there's something I feel will not be conveyed in either the expression, yeah, I'll double down and write it in the action notes.
Cool, cool.
Lapis says it very deadpan.
Yes.
She is quite deadpan.
Yeah.
Assume deadpan if not specified otherwise.
I've said this before, like, you know, it's interesting because her powers are water, but she's very dry with her humor.
That is my favorite, yeah. It's not a lot of the other.
I don't know if that was on purpose, but I would read her lines, I'm like, and, you know, just the contrast with her interaction with Shelby, how she's like, you know,
so
always
big,
acting crazy.
Yeah.
So I just like, okay, I need to be the straight man in this,
yeah,
in this,
great,
this dynamic. So I would read it dry and like Rebecca would be like, okay, that's it. That's how you do it. I'm like, that's really funny. She's dry, but she controls water.
The pun is a missed opportunity in the show, honestly.
I have never thought of it that way, but yeah, I super enjoy writing dialogue for you. Like, when you're not, like, super sad as a character, when you're just having regular...
Right, yeah.
Your kind of status quo is that you're just, like, a really dry...
Thank you for that. Because, honestly, like, for a while, I would come in and I'm like, gosh, she's so... There's all this, like...
She's working through it, man.
...trauma. And I actually have really enjoyed the last few times you've seen her because you see her just, like, light and interacting and just, like, kind of being with the other gems. And it's not like this traumatic thing, although it's all there.
Yeah,
she's masking it.
I feel like she's the most like real time when it comes to trauma. It's, you know, it doesn't just like, it's cool, guys, I'm a crystal gem now.
Yeah.
She's a slow burn, and that's fine, and I like it, and it's good.
Yeah, it's real.
Takes a while.
You really have to earn it with her.
Yeah. You don't want to rush her.
Yes.
She's not to be rushed.
Yes.
Keeps things interesting.
Yeah.
Jen, what's it like when you get your hands on a new script? Like, when you're in the booth, or do you get it beforehand?
I do get it like the night before, like a couple days before.
Like cliff notes you print out.
I know. I'm always so, you know, thrilled to get a new script about Lapis because I'm genuinely curious to see where you guys are taking her. Like out of all the gems, she's just kind of like still this very mysterious, untapped, you know, you're still learning about her. She's still processing all this internal trauma she's had. She's still figuring out how to interact with everyone around her. She's still figuring out how to interact with people in her space. You know, you have to imagine that she was trapped for thousands and thousands of years by herself. And now, you know, like you're like, okay, where are they going to take her? And I was listening actually a couple days ago to the podcast that you did with Matt and Ben, and how when you first met her, she has this tremendous amount of power. Like she basically took out the three gems in that first episode that you see her in. And then also that they said that she likes fart jokes and that she's awkward. So, like, the possibilities were endless with her. It's like, oh, my gosh, which way are they going to take her? So it's really fun to see. And when I get the script, it's like, okay, which side of Lapis are we going to
She definitely is carving her own path kind of in real time, figuring out and deciding it. I mean, I think with, like, any character, there's tons of potential. But what they go through and how they interact with stuff informs how they proceed and how they use that potential.
Right.
Which is interesting.
So, Hillary, do you, like, now that you know Lapis better, do you write it thinking of, like, Jen's delivery? Or are there any particular times where you've written something and been really excited to hear it come back?
I think that one of my favorite episodes that I've done writing on is Barnmates. And
that's a fun one.
There's a lot. Both you and Shelby nailed that one. Especially when
it's always nice to hear.
No, it's perfect. When she digs or she fills up the hole with water, and it's like, I made you a smaller than average size lake. And your delivery of oops, like, was it water? Was like the tomb I lived in.
Right. For, it's so like, dark. That's right. Months. She's like, water. Seriously. I'm done with this.
I kind of knew how it would go, but you went above and beyond.
Did I? Oh, good. Yeah,
it was perfect.
That's really nice for me to hear because out of all of us, like, I still, like, I'm rarely there. Mm-hmm. So when I come in for a record, it's like, okay, I just want to please. I want to make sure that I deliver on the vision that they had and hope that it's rooted in truthfulness and they, you know, it's I get, yeah, I deliver it.
Oh, you so did. It was great.
It's
yeah.
good to hear that.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes it ends up being like too much, but I always find that it's the most funny when Lapis drops like some dark realness casually. Like, oh, by the way. Remember this awful thing that happened? Yeah. I think about it sometimes.
It's like, oh, I thought everyone was like that. That's just me?
But yeah.
Were there any, like, specific scenes or episodes that just really clicked for you guys, either of you?
I loved Room for Ruby. I really enjoyed seeing her evolution in that you can really see that she's the realist in this, you know, this whole situation. Like, the other gems, Peridot and Steven were all ready to, like, except Ruby, and she was like, wait, hold on, you guys. Wait, hold, slow your roll. Like, we don't know. The last time we saw Ruby, she wanted to kill you. Like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And it was so satisfying at the end to see that, okay, you guys, she was right. Like, yeah. She was right in, you know,
Lapis
being suspicious.
Never forgets.
But she went along with it, which, you know, she was a good sport, but there was that let's proceed with caution, you guys. And I really appreciate that process that she has. That was a very sort of pivotal moment for me. Like, oh, okay, she's kind of the pessimist. Like, that's really valuable.
Yeah, actually, that's you saying it now, it makes so much sense. And that's probably why I like writing for her, is everyone else is pretty much like an optimist.
Yeah.
And she's...
And I'm just like, wait, hold on. Like, hold on, you guys.
She's like more realistic.
And I'm kind of like that in my partnership with my fella. Like, he's such an idealist, and I'm just like, I'm the jaded, like, you know, oh gosh, been there, done that. Like, all right, you're going to learn. You're going to learn. Yeah. So that was very satisfying. And she was like, ha, I knew it.
Got you.
That was a really fun episode because, like, she was just so confused that somebody could be that well adjusted.
Absolutely. And that really sort of like triggered her resentment. Like, oh my gosh, like, it took me so long. And here's this gem, like, just relentlessly upbeat about it all. the more she was, the more annoyed, like, Lapis was. So, but then she was very self-aware in that she, you know, she gave herself a timeout. She was like, she went away. And then she was like, wait, you guys, something's really wrong with me. Like, and she just kind of dialed it back. Like, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me, but something is wrong. So, and she does in her way kind of apologize to Ruby when she says, you know, no, it's not you. It's me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you feel unwelcome here. So, right?
Yeah. Actually, the con side is maybe she, like, runs away a bit, but also the pro side to that is that she's very good at, like, stepping back and being like, look, I can't deal. I need some time to think about this. I'm going to come back.
Yes.
Which is a valuable skill.
Which is so interesting because now she left, but she, I don't know. Like, she...
I don't know either.
Well, no, but it makes sense. It makes sense for her because, like, you know, like, she's always the, like you said, the realist. And it's like, there are intergalactic dictators, you know, targeting this planet. Why are you guys just, like, okay with this, you know? Like,
I know. Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah. Like, you can totally see where she's coming from.
Yeah.
Absolutely. She's definitely sort of in this survival mode, like, hearing that the diamonds are coming back to, you know, looking for Steven. Yeah, she freaks out. And I don't think she's able to see 3-4 steps ahead yet. She's just like, oh my gosh, okay, they're coming. And it's just like reminding her of where she was during the war. So I kind of like associate it with, you know, when you're like on a airplane and when it's about to take off, they're like saying like, okay, if in case of an oxygen, there's no oxygen in the cabin, like secure your mask first. Like,
yeah,
she's securing her mask first.
And then you worry about your child after. Yes.
Yeah. And then she's no good for anyone. Like,
that's perfect.
Secure your mask before you can assist others. So y'all like hating on Lapis for leaving, like, just hold on. She's just securing her mask.
Yeah.
She'll get to the children in a second.
that's so perfect. Great. Where do you guys think like her head is at, like, after leaving, like, just continuing on with that train of thought with what she's thinking about? I don't know.
Where she's at while she's securing her mask?
Yeah. Yes, while she's securing the mask.
When you deal with conflict, sometimes you just kind of go back to your behavioral patterns. You know, this is what she's used to. Like, okay, she was trapped in that mirror for thousands and thousands of years. So she's kind of given herself a self-inflicted timeout, maybe, you know, securing her mask. And now
she's got, there's like a ton of emotion, especially when she thinks of her connection to people and gems on Earth. But she reverts to the base, like, fight or flight. She knows, like, possible diamond interaction is bad. She doesn't want to deal with it. Peace out.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is fair and valid.
That's like, life, you know, right?
She's only recently been introduced to a peaceful, like, non-war landscape.
Right.
Yeah, I understand. I understand where she's coming from.
You've been in that situation?
Yeah, no, it's interesting because for me, I've been called out on this, like, it's that I tend to, like, if I have a problem, it's hard for me to ask for help. I'll go away and try to go figure it out myself and then come back to my partner, which for him, like, it deprives him of the opportunity to actually help me, and which he finds so much joy in helping me solve a problem. But sometimes I'm just like, no, I need to go figure this out for myself. But I've been called out, like, you know, that's not relational. Like,
you need to
let me help you if you need help. But sometimes I'm just like, let me just go deal with something. I don't want to be a burden to you right now.
Yeah.
It's
not easy to be part of a team.
Yes.
It takes.
And she's figuring that out.
There's a learning process.
Yeah.
It takes two.
In a relationship.
Yeah. I totally understand. So overall, what would you say is your favorite part of working on Lapis?
Everything.
I do like the dialogue. She's fun to write for. She's got the flowy skirt.
True.
That's fun to like draw when she's, it's not necessarily like fun to track, but it's fun to draw when she's using her powers. Yeah, there's lots of really dynamic stuff you can do with water, and it's fun to draw that.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think she's, you know, with her character, like, you guys have been able to tackle some dark, deep issues with her.
Yeah.
There's a great opportunity there for a children's show. That's amazing to do in a way that's, like, not intimidating, and adults can understand it. And kids can take away what they can with it.
Right, yeah.
What are you hoping people will take away from it? From her character and her arc and everything?
Gosh, I just thought of Alone at Sea all of a sudden like that.
That's the one?
That's the one right there.
There
I mean, that people can take away that no matter how horrible of a situation you've been in, you are strong enough to get out of it, you know?
Hmm.
And that's Lapis's plight, like that's her thing, like she she was in this horrible situation and she got out of it, and it gets better, you guys, it gets
it
better,
it gets better.
Yeah,
that's real.
Yeah,
that's real. Yeah, and I was saying earlier that, you know, she is not, you know, better in an episode. She has long-standing trauma, and that's going to take a while, and that involves failing and making mistakes and running away and coming back, and you just kind of have to keep doing it and keep trying.
It's all part of the process.
Yes.
Right,
certainly, like, self-examination, examining the way you interact with others, if that's healthy. She's got all those things.
Right.
She needs therapy.
She's working it out.
She's working it out.
It's important. Yeah, she is asking questions, and she's, you know, when she talks to Steven about stuff, that's great, you know.
And she likes a good fart joke.
And
I mean, come on.
Yeah. And if you have a sense of humor, it counts for a lot.
Yes, yes.
It can help. The whole package.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to me.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. Lapis Lazuli herself is coming up. All right, guys, I am here with Lapis Lazuli. Lapis, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So I have
What's
a few questions.
What's going on?
Nothing
Where are
much.
We? Is
just...
this, am I speaking into this okay?
Yes, yes, yes. You're doing a great job.
Okay.
Yes. Perfect. So I have a few questions to ask you from some fans. So I'm just going to read through them, and if you have any comments, then let me know. Okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, cool. The first question I have is, what is the best idea for a meat morph that you've ever had? And this is from Didvax.
Didvax.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I love a good fart joke.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually wanted to include the pumpkin seeds in the toilet, but Peridot shot that down.
Oh.
It was a little, I don't know, I thought it was a great idea, but she shot that down.
Not a fan.
Not a fan of the pumpkin seeds in the toilet.
In that same vein, do you have any ideas for, like, that sounded really good for a meat morph, but then they didn't end up coming together?
I wanted to put together a bunch of cat hair, like cat balls, around the wall in the barn. But then when I was looking for cats, Pumpkin did not like that.
Mm.
Pumpkin got very jealous of me trying to find cats.
Oh, like, yeah. Like,
so that was not good.
It's a territorial thing, I think, you know?
Very territorial thing that Pumpkin just did not like.
Mm-hmm. Another question is, a lot of people ask this one, if you think water is wet.
Do I think water is wet?
Yeah, because you're like the expert, right?
It's certainly salty, but I like that it just, no matter what, my hair just always is intact in the water.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know if it's wet. I don't even know what that means.
I don't think anyone does. I think that's the big question there. But that's some good commentary.
What do you think?
I think that water itself can't really be wet. Like, water can make other things. They can, if you're on a surface that's not normally wet, and you put water on it, then that makes it wet.
Yes.
But, like, water is always, it's, you can't put water on water. I don't know. These are questions beyond my pay grade.
Yeah. I mean, between salt water and fresh water, I like salt water.
It's your preference, the ocean?
It's my preference.
Very nice. Okay, cool. And then I have one more question from Michael, who wants to know why you don't wear shoes.
Well, being trapped in a mirror for thousands and thousands of years, I never really got out, so I didn't have any footwear. You know, you really don't need shoes to fly around.
Right.
So I just kind of got used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Who needs shoes in the air?
Yeah. Like, what's the point of walking when you can fly?
Right. Yes.
I totally understand. So that would sort of eliminate the need for shoes. Makes sense.
I hope that helps.
Yes, that does. That clears it up.
Okay.
Thank you so much for coming on and talking to me, Lapis.
You're welcome. Okay. Bye.
The Steven Universe podcast is produced by Charles Abadji, Stacey Pera, and Conrad Montgomery. Special thanks to Rob Sorcher, Cartoon Network Studios, The Crooniverse, and Turner Studios in Atlanta. You can subscribe to the Steven Universe podcast now at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts so that you never miss an episode. And please leave us a 5-star rating and review while you're there. I'm Mackenzie Atwood, and I will see you next Thursday.